their labor shall not be in vain in the Lord. The next day we endeavored to purge the society of all that did not walk according to the gospel. By this means we reduced the number of members to less than 1,900. But number is an inconsiderable circumstance. May God increase them in faith and love. Friday, August 24th, St. Bartholomew's Day. I preached, I suppose, the last time at St. Mary's, Oxford. Be it so. I am now clear of the blood of these men. I have fully delivered my own soul. The beadle came to me afterwards and told me the vice-chancellor had sent him for my notes. I sent them without delay, not without admiring the wise providence of God. Perhaps few men of note would have given a sermon of mine the reading if I had put it into their hands, but by this means it came to be read, probably more than once, by every man of eminence in the university. Wesley's Chancery Bill. Thursday, December 27, I called on the solicitor whom I had employed in the suit lately commenced in Chancery, and here I first saw that foul monster, a Chancery Bill. A scroll it was of 42 pages in large folio to tell a story which needed not to have taken up 40 lines and stuffed with such stupid, senseless, improbable lies, many of them too quite foreign to the question, as, I believe, would have cost the compiler his life in any heathen court of either Greece or Rome. And this is equity in a Christian country? This is the English method of redressing other grievances? 1745, Saturday, January 5th. I had often wondered at myself, and sometimes mentioned it to others, that 10,000 cares of various kinds were no more weight and burden to my mind than 10,000 hairs were to my head. Perhaps I began to ascribe something of this to my own strength, and thence it might be that on Sunday the 13th the strength was withheld, and I felt what it was to be troubled about many things. One and another hurrying me continually, it seized upon my spirit more and more, till I found it absolutely necessary to fly for my life, and that without delay. So the next day, Monday the 14th, I took horse and rode away from Bristol. Between Bath and Bristol, I was earnestly desired to turn aside and call at the house of a poor man, William Shalwood. I found him and his wife sick in one bed, and with small hopes of recovery of either. Yet, after prayer, I believe they would not die, but live and declare the loving kindness of the Lord. The next time I called, he was sitting downstairs and his wife able to go abroad. As soon as we came into the house at Bristol, my soul was lightened of her load, of that insufferable weight which had lain upon my mind, more or less, for several days. On Sunday, several of our friends from Wales and other parts joined with us in the great sacrifice of thanksgiving, and every day we found more and more cause to praise God and to give him thanks for his still increasing benefits. Monday, February 18th, I set out with Richard Moss from London for Newcastle. Wesley's effective letter. Sunday, March 3rd. As I was walking up Pilgrim Street, hearing a man call after me, I stood still. He came up and used much abusive language, intermixed with many oaths and curses. Several people came out to see what was the matter, on which he pushed me twice or thrice and went away. Upon inquiry, I found this man had signalized himself a long season by abusing and throwing stones at any of our family who went that way. Therefore, I would not lose the opportunity, but on Monday the 4th sent him the following note. Robert Young, I expect to see you between this and Friday, and to hear from you that you are sensible of your fault. Otherwise, in pity to your soul, I shall be obliged to inform the magistrates of your assaulting me yesterday in the street. I am your real friend, John Wesley. Within 2 or 3 hours, Robert Young came and promised a quite different behavior. So did this gentle reproof, if not save a soul from death, yet prevent a multitude of sins. Saturday, April 6th. Mr. Stevenson, who, of whom I bought the ground on which our house is built, came at length, after delaying it more than 2 years, and executed the writings. So I am freed from one more care. May I in everything make known my request to God. Press Gang and Methodists, Wednesday, June 19th, Redruth. Being informed here of what had befallen Mr. Maxfield, we turned aside toward Crowan Churchtown, but in the way we received information that he had been removed from thence the night before. It seems that the valiant constables who guarded him, having received timely notice that a body of 500 Methodists was coming to take him away by force, had, with great precipitation, carried him 2 miles further to the house of one Henry Tompkins. Here we found him, nothing terrified by his adversaries. I desired Henry Tompkins to show me the warrant. It was directed to Dr. Borlase and his father, and Mr. Eustick, to the constables and overseers of several parishes, requiring them to apprehend all such able-bodied men as had no lawful calling or sufficient maintenance, and to bring them before the aforesaid gentlemen at Marazon on Friday the 21st to be examined whether they were proper persons to serve His Majesty in the land service. It was endorsed by the steward of Sir John St. Aubyn, with the names of 7 or 8 persons, most of whom were well known to have lawful callings and a sufficient maintenance thereby. But that was all one. They were called Methodists. Therefore, soldiers they must be. Underneath was added, a person, his name unknown, who disturbs the peace of the parish. A word to the wise. The good man easily understood this could be none but the Methodist preacher. For who disturbs the peace of the parish? Like one who tells all drunkards, whoremongers, and common swearers, you are in the high road to hell. When we came out of the house, 40 or 50 myrmidons stood ready to receive us, but I turned full upon them, and their courage failed, nor did they recover till we were at some distance. Then they began blustering again and throwing stones, one of which struck Mr. Thompson's servant. Friday the 21st, we rode to Marazon, vulgarly called Market Jew. Finding the justices were not met, we walked up St. Michael's Mount. The house at the top is surprisingly large and pleasant. Sir John St. Aubyn has taken many pains and been at considerable expense in repairing and beautifying the apartments, and when the seat was finished, the owner died. About 2, Mr. Thompson and I went into the room where the justices and commissioners were. After a few minutes, Dr. Borlase stood up and asked whether we had any business. I told him, we have. We desire to be heard concerning one who was lately apprehended at Crowan. He said, gentlemen, the business of Crowan does not come on yet. You shall be sent for when it does. So we retired and waited in another room till after 9 o'clock. They delayed the affair of Mr. Maxfield, as we imagined they would, to the very last. About 9 he was called. I would have gone in then, but Mr. Thompson advised to wait a little longer. The next information we received was that they had sentenced him to go for a soldier. Hearing this, we went straight to the commission chamber, but the honorable gentlemen were gone. They had ordered Mr. Maxfield to be immediately put on board a boat and carried for Penzance. We were informed that they had first offered him to a captain of a man of war that was just come into the harbor, but he answered, I have no authority to take such men as these unless you would have me give him so much a week to preach and pray to my people. Reading the Riot Act. Saturday the 22nd. We reached St. Ives about 2 in the morning. At 5 I preached on Love Your Enemies, and at Gwenep in the evening on All That Will Live Godly in Christ Jesus Shall Suffer Persecution. We heard today that as soon as Mr. Maxfield came to Penzance, they put him down into the dungeon, and that the mayor, being inclined to let him go, Dr. Borlase had gone thither on purpose and had himself read the articles of war in the court and delivered him to one who was to act as an officer. Saturday the 29th. I preached at St. Just again and at Morva and Center on Sunday the 30th. About 6 in the evening, I began preaching at St. Ives in the street near John Nance's door. A multitude of people were quickly assembled, both high and low, rich and poor, and I observed not any creature to laugh or smile or hardly move hand or foot. I expounded the gospel for the day, beginning with, "Then drew near all the publicans and sinners for to hear him." Luke 15:1. A little before 7 came Mr. Edwards from the mayor and ordered one to read the proclamation against riots. I concluded quickly after, but the body of the people appeared utterly unsatisfied, not knowing how to go away. 40 or 50 of them begged they might be present at the meeting of the society, and we rejoiced together for an hour in such a manner as I had never before in Cornwall known. Tuesday, July 2nd. I preached in the evening at St. Just. I observed not only several gentlemen there who I suppose never came before, but a large body of tinners who stood at a distance from the rest, and a great multitude of men, women, and children beside, who seemed not well to know why they came. Almost as soon as we had done singing, a kind of gentlewoman began. I have seldom seen a poor creature take so much pains. She scolded and screamed and spit and stamped and wrung her hands and distorted her face and body all manner of ways. I took no notice of her at all, good or bad, nor did almost anyone else. Afterward, I heard she was one that had been bred a Papist, and when she heard we were so, rejoiced greatly. No wonder she would be proportionately angry when she was disappointed of her hope. Mr. Eustace, a neighboring gentleman, came just as I was concluding my sermon. The people opening to the right and left, he came up to me and said, "Sir, I have a warrant from Dr. Borlase, and you must go with me." Then, turning around, he said, "Sir, are you Mr. Shepherd? If so, you are mentioned in the warrant, too. Be pleased, sir, to come with me." We walked with him to a public house near the end of the town. Here he asked me if I was willing to go with him to the doctor. I told him just then, if he pleased. "Sir," said he, "I must wait upon you in your inn, and in the morning, if you will be so good as to go with me, I will show you the way." So he handed me back to my inn and retired. Wesley seized for a soldier. Wednesday the 3rd. I waited till 9, but no Mr. Eustace came. I then desired Mr. Shepherd to go and inquire for him at the house wherein he had lodged. He met him, coming, as he thought, to our inn. But after waiting some time, we inquired again and learned he had turned aside to another house in the town. I went thither and asked, "Is Mr. Eustace here?" After some pause, one said, "Yes," and showed me into the parlor. When he came down, he said, "Oh, sir, will you be so good as to go with me to the doctor's?" I answered, "Sir, I came for that purpose." "Are you ready, sir?" I answered, "Yes." "Sir, I am not quite ready. In a little time, sir, in a quarter of an hour, I will wait upon you. I will come to William Jenhall's." In about 3/4 of an hour he came, and finding there was no remedy, he called for his horse and put forward toward Dr. Borlase's house, but he was in no haste, so that we were an hour and a quarter riding 3 or 4 measured miles. As soon as we came into the yard, he asked a servant, "Is the doctor at home?" Upon whose answering, "No, sir, he has gone to church," he presently said, "Well, sir, I have executed my commission. I have done, sir, I have no more to say." About noon, Mr. Shepherd and I reached St. Ives. After a few hours' rest, we rode to Gwynup. Finding the house would not contain 1/4 of the people, I stood before the door. I was reading my text when a man came, raging as if he had just broken out of the tombs, and riding into the thickest of the people, seized 3 or 4, one after another, none lifting up a hand against him. A second gentleman, so-called, soon came after, if possible more furious than he, and ordered his men to seize on some others, Mr. Shepherd in particular. Most of the people, however, stood still as they were before and began singing a hymn. Upon this, Mr. B. lost all patience and cried out with all his might, "Seize him, seize him. I say, seize the preacher for His Majesty's service." But no one stirring, he rode up and struck several of his attendants, cursing them bitterly for not doing as they were bidden. Perceiving still that they would not move, he leaped off his horse, swore he would do it himself, and caught hold of my cassock, crying, "I take you to serve His Majesty." A servant taking his horse, he took me by the arm, and we walked arm in arm for about 3/4 of a mile. He entertained me all the time with the wickedness of the fellows belonging to the society. When he was taking breath, I said, "Sir, be they what they will, I apprehend it will not justify you in seizing me in this manner and violently carrying me away, as you said, to serve His Majesty." He replied, "I seize you and violently carry you away." "No, sir, no, nothing like it. I asked you to go with me to my house, and you said you were willing. And if so, you are welcome. And if not, you are welcome to go where you please." I answered, "Sir, I know not if it would be safe for me to go back through this rabble." "Sir," said he, "I will go with you myself." He then called for his horse and another for me and rode back with me to the place from which he took me. Dramatic scenes at Falmouth. Thursday the 4th, I rode to Falmouth. About 3 in the afternoon, I went to see a gentlewoman who had been long indisposed. Almost as soon as I sat down, the house was beset on all sides by an innumerable multitude of people. A louder or more confused noise could hardly be at the taking of a city by storm. At first, Mrs. B. and her daughter endeavored to quiet them, but it was labor lost. They might as well have attempted to still the raging of the sea. They were soon glad to shift for themselves and leave K.E. and me to do as well as we could. The rabble roared with all their throats, "Bring out the canorum. Where is the canorum?" An unmeaning word which the coroners generally used against the Methodists. No answer being given, they quickly forced open the outer door and filled the passage. Only a wainscot partition was between us, which was not likely to stand long. I immediately took down a large looking glass which hung against it, supposing the whole side would fall in at once. When they began their work with abundance of bitter imprecations, poor Kitty was utterly astonished and cried out, "Oh, sir, what must we do?" I said, "We must pray." Indeed, at that time, to all appearance, our lives were not worth an hour's purchase. She asked, "But, sir, is it not better for you to hide yourself, to get into the closet?" I answered, "No, it is best for me to stand just where I am." Among those without were the crews of some privateers which were lately come into harbor. Some of these, being angry at the slowness of the rest, thrust them away and, coming up all together, set their shoulders to the inner door and cried out, "Avast, lads, avast!" Away went all the hinges at once, and the door fell back into the room. I stepped forward at once into the midst of them and said, "Here I am. Which of you has anything to say to me? To which of you have I done any wrong? To you, or you, or you?" I continued speaking till I came bareheaded as I was, for I purposely left my hat that they might all see my face, into the middle of the street, and then raising my voice said, "Neighbors, countrymen, do you desire to hear me speak?" They cried vehemently, "Yes, yes, he shall speak, he shall, nobody shall hinder him." But having nothing to stand on and no advantage of ground, I could be heard by few only. However, I spoke without intermission, and, as far as the sound reached, the people were still, till one or two of their captains turned about and swore that not a man should touch me. Mr. Thomas, a clergyman, then came up and asked, "Are you not ashamed to use a stranger thus?" He was soon seconded by 2 or 3 gentlemen of the town and 1 of the aldermen, with whom I walked down the town, speaking all the time, till I came to Mrs. Mattern's house. The gentleman proposed sending for my horse to the door and desired me to step in and rest the meantime, but on second thought they judged it not advisable to let me go out among the people again, so they chose to send my horse before